Donald Trump draws thousands to Jacksonville, even as he marks one of the worst weeks of his campaign. Concern over Zika virus growing here in Florida. And the feds raid the headquarters of a man some call a Jacksonville slumlord. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes or download the show through NPR's One app. And you can watch video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. Already getting your calls? Get on the line now and join in. 549-2937. Then later, TEDx Jacksonville announces its new lineup. Plus, Florida is celebrating its farmers markets this month. We'll tell you how you can be part of that. All of that ahead. But first, a very busy news week to discuss as we welcome Andrew Pantazzi of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Julie Delegal, who writes for Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
And Fred Matthews, formerly of The Examiner.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have you all here, and lots to talk about, from concern over the spread of Zika in South Florida to the feds raiding the headquarters of a company under fire for problems at Jacksonville's Eureka Garden. All of that ahead, but we begin the hour with our top story. Donald Trump had one of the worst weeks of his presidential campaign this week, with a stunning number of controversies and gaffes. We'll discuss those, as GOP insiders are now openly calling for Trump to drop out of the race as he continues to drop in the polls. But it made no difference to thousands of local supporters Wednesday night at Trump's rally at Veterans Memorial Arena.
You've got thousands of people outside trying to get in, and they can't get in. And this is one hell of a big stadium, I'll tell you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a great honor. Jacksonville, great place. How's your football team going to be? Good, good? I think so. I hear good things. I hear good things.
We begin the hour with a closer look at Trump's stop in Jacksonville and Daytona Beach, by the way. And we take your calls. Oh, my goodness. Already lots of calls at 549-2937. Okay. Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. A new poll from Suffolk University finds Hillary Clinton now leads Donald Trump in Florida by 6 points in a two-way race. She's down to a 4-point lead if you factor in the nominees, the Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson and Jill Stein of the Green Party. Donald Trump dealing with a slew of controversies. Let's just go over them. The Gold Star family, Mr. and Mrs. Khan. Donald Trump saying he was glad to be given a Purple Heart at a rally, that it was easier than earning it in combat. Referencing a video about payments to Iran that foreign policy experts say is non-existent. Calling on the Russians to find Hillary Clinton's missing emails. Refusing to endorse John McCain and Paul Ryan for re-election. And kicking a crying baby out of one of his events. That's what's happened in the last week. None of that makes a dent with the thousands of supporters who packed Veterans Arena for Trump's campaign.
It was quite a rally. If you missed it, you missed a great show. It was one of the shows of the week. A number of folks said, why are you going? Because we have to cover it. It's the news event of the week for Jacksonville, so you have to be there in order to experience it. It's better to experience it all the time on C-SPAN. You go there and you get everything you need to get. You know, despite all of that, the folks who were in that arena ate it up. They sat there for at least 2.5 hours. He was late an hour in Daytona for the speech there, but he got there and basically about 45 minutes later than the time we expected him to get on stage here in Jacksonville. But he made it. The folks ate it up. The signs were everywhere. If you've never been in a campaign rally, you didn't want to miss this one this week. It was everything you wanted to be. And if all the questions were answered as to why the mayor, what the mayor was going to do there, well, now we know. He was the MC for the entire event. But despite all those issues there, Melissa, mm-hmm. For the folks who support this candidate, it doesn't make any difference. For those in the military with the Purple Heart issue, which, by the way, we're having a Purple Heart ceremony here in Jacksonville on Saturday. The thing that struck me was, why didn't he give it back to the guy instead of parading around?
What did you think as a veteran about the Purple Heart thing?
Well, he should have given it back. Thank you for your service, as is always done, and give it back. This is a gentleman with how many deferments? 15? Okay? Give it back. Thank you for presenting it to me. Instead, he's parading around the country, as he did in Jacksonville, with a purple heart in his hand, you know, that he got.
Do you think it, but, you know, Julie Delegal, the issues with the Kahn family and the Purple Heart have upset some veterans inclined to support Donald Trump, but not all.
Well, actually, on the in the New York Times today, there's a picture of a Jacksonville veteran holding up an anti-Trump sign. So he is alienating some veterans in Jacksonville and other places. But I think the biggest alienation is the mayor getting up and supporting this man and his demagoguery at a time when he's calling for one city, one Jacksonville for his pension tax. He's relying on everybody to pass that tax, and he's offending a lot of people in our community, including me.
Tim Gibbons.
It's interesting that Alvin Brown, when he was mayor, was actually kind of cascaded both from a political standpoint and also just building up his base of every time President Obama was in town, the mayor had something else he was at, some event, some mayoral conference thing. He just wasn't in town here, you know, because the idea was he did not want to be seen with the Democratic president. This obviously was not the case in this case. When you have a much more divisive figure and, you know, as Julie says, the trying to pass the pension tax, which is not a, it can't be a partisan issue. If it's a partisan issue, it just won't pass.
Andrew Pantazzi, is Mayor Lenny Curry's public support of Donald Trump going to hurt him with his efforts to pass the pension tax or not?
I mean, this election has made me shy away from making any predictions. Any predictions I thought would have happened have not held true, but we're in the final stretch. We're in the final month for selling this pension tax. And right now, really being able to educate people about what the pension tax actually does, why they should support it, is paramount. One of the things I noticed at the rally was when he did introduce the pension tax, it got sort of a tepid reception. It wasn't something that was necessarily pitched along sort of Trumpian lines of whether it was, you know, this is about like Blue Lives Matter or police or like it wasn't.
Pension is huge.
It was presented in more, I felt like, staid language, more. I mean, Lenny Curry is a former accountant, and in those that type of language and a Republican audience being told you should pass a sales tax extension at a presidential rally did not go crazy.
Uh-huh.
They didn't seem to oppose. They just didn't seem to know what
more
to make of it.
Yeah, sure. Well, Fred Matthews, Lenny Curry has dispatched a former employee. She's taking a break from City Hall. And former city councilwoman Denise Lee to try to sell this pension plan to more Democrat-leaning audiences. What about this? Because the polling shows it's sort of a mixed bag on the pension, and it certainly will be a bipartisan push in the end.
Well, it will, but she's got to find an audience. Former Councilwoman Lee's expertise is in campaign management and in getting signs out and in bundling dollars to usually her campaign. It is not in getting in front of an audience and trying to sell them on something that she would not normally have to do. And the problem that she's got right now is you know, the issue that immediately after opposing a Democrat mayor, you turn right back around and accept a $90,000 job with a Republican mayor, and you're supposed to be, you're fighting blight in the community against guys with car washes who are employing sometimes former inmates who that's the only job they can get is these car washes. And nothing has changed, by the way, in the years since she's had the job. So what is she going to sell to these folks? I mean, and here we are, we're 5 days after she's, you know, this announcement was made and nothing's been on the street.
And let me get back to the issue of Donald Trump's polling in Florida. Of course, he certainly is drawing big crowds, but presidential candidates, Mitt Romney comes to mind. He was stunned by his loss because he was drawing huge crowds. Crowds don't make up the Electoral College in the final analysis. In Florida, as I said, Clinton in a four-way race is up on Trump 4 points. Politico, the Politico Caucus, which is a panel of activists, strategists, and operatives in 11 swing states, is saying anonymously that they are begging Trump to think about dropping out of the race. A Florida Republican is quoted as saying, "The effect Trump is having on down-ballot races has the potential to be devastating in November. His negative image among Hispanics, women, and independents will be devastating to Republicans, and his divisive rhetoric to the Hispanic community at large has the potential to be devastating for years to come." And he's talking about the Republican Party as a whole. Julie.
The one thing that Trump does not have, that Hillary Clinton has, is a ground game. And I think we're going to see that in November.
You think that will tell the tale?
I think that will tell the tale. I think the I-4 corridor, which is home to many of the Latina people that you just referenced, is going to tell the tale.
And let me just jump on some callers really quickly. Dale in Avondale. Hi, Dale in Avondale. Hi, Dale. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
All righty. Well, I don't even know where to start today, but let me just say, and I think what we're dealing with now, and I heard Fred when he made the comment of, you know, it was the news story of the week, and they had to go out and cover it, and I can understand that. But I think that, you know, the rise of Donald Trump in the Republican Party, that is part of the problem. I mean, you know, as far as, you know, his coverage has been, he gets on stage, he says all kinds of hateful and negative things about people in this country, and, you know, I can even go back to what he said in regards to John McCain and his, you know, his service for this country, the sacrifice that he made. I mean, I thought, you know, but it's covered on every network, everything that he says, and he knows how to get the attention of the media, which has somewhat been very helpful in, you know, where he's standing right now as the Republican Party presidential candidate. I think that, you know, that it's ridiculous that you have a man of his temperament and mentality, you know, representing the Republican Party as a whole. And when we cut on the television and we hear a man running for some elected office here in Florida saying, I'm not ashamed to support Trump. That statement in itself says that there's something about Trump that you should be ashamed of.
Thanks for the call, Dale. Okay. Let me just keep things moving along. Thanks, Dale. I appreciate the call.
Pulling together two thoughts. One of that idea of the ground game, and then the caller mentioned the idea of turning it on, seeing negative statements. I work for the Business Journal. Obviously, we look at the business side of things. And one of the fascinating bits that we seized on during the rally was Trump basically coming out and talking about the loss of manufacturing jobs in Jacksonville and how bad the economy is. And, you know, Florida's economy just sucks, which is an interesting thing in a state led by a Republican who really pushes jobs and a mayor who's a Republican who really pushes things like Amazon coming to town. There's a negativity not even against different ethnic groups, but even just this total tone of the world's coming to an end. And that message wasn't calibrated for Jacksonville. If you want to do a world's coming to an end message, saying we're losing manufacturing jobs doesn't work in Jacksonville. A more focused politician would have done that differently.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Jacksonville from even like looking at Republican leaders of this city historically have been all for globalism because we are in a sense a globalist city. We have Jaxport. We import, we export. We are the logistics capital of the country. Therefore, like, in a sense, trade deals really benefit us. Now, it is true. We have lost manufacturing, like the paper mills. We have lost certain amounts of manufacturing. But I think a lot of traditional Republican leaders in the past would have said the way forward is to say we are going to be the trade capital of the Atlantic coast.
All right. Let's go now to Elizabeth. She's on the road somewhere in town. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I am mystified and yet not mystified at the total lack of moral core by these Republican leaders. For Lenny Curry, for Pam Bondi is just sickening. For them to be there rah-rahing for Donald Trump, and everybody talking about, well, he's going to pivot. There is no place to pivot. There is no there. The man is mentally unstable. There is no there. I don't know how many times are we going to sit back and wait for him to pivot. Pivot to what? The lowest common denominator? Because that seems to be all that he is expert at.
Okay, thanks for the call. You know, thanks for the call. Fred.
One of the interesting things about the comments by the Republican candidate this week was his use of the words, if we, and maybe, we might not win, if we don't. I found it was only in just one section of his remarks. He didn't really have a speech. He doesn't do speeches. But in the hour and something that he spoke, he used the term maybe and if we don't win, which was goes hand in hand with what has been already talked about. You know, the drumbeat is starting about withdrawing from the race. And
do you think Donald Trump or someone in his campaign is looking at the poll numbers, is perhaps laying the groundwork for if he does lose the election?
He's all about
laying down a narrative of why he didn't win.
He's laying down the narrative. He's all about winning. He can read the electoral map just like McCain could read it, just like everybody else can read it. And despite all of this hoopla and the rallies and the press, he's gotten $1 billion worth of press without having to spend a dime. The electoral map doesn't change that radically. And that's what's beginning to show up here.
Let's go to Don on the South Side. Go ahead, Don.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to preface this by the emails and the creation of ISIS in Iraq. During the two wars, Bremer would be reporting back to Bush, but in the background, Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice were using email and Hotmail. It's in this book, Life in the Emerald City. Now, not only that, because Bush harped on this forever. I mean, this is just, she should be put in jail and all this crap. What the hell happened? Where's our historical perspective? And second of all, he says that Obama and she created ISIS. No, that was de-bathification. So, you know, it just amazes me that we seem to be so myopic. We're talking about this race, and yet mm-hmm. there's no historical perspective. Anyway, that's my comment.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you for that, Don. You know, and this has come up before on this show, both Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice did use personal email while Secretary of State. But when you delve a little more deeply into it, House Republicans would counter by saying that the controversy was that Hillary Clinton set up a private server at her home, and all of her email went through a private server. None of it went through a government server. Now, that said, there are certainly two points of view on Hillary Clinton's email controversy. And the caller also referenced ISIS, and I do think historical context is important there to discuss as well. But we're getting a little off topic. It wasn't Hillary Clinton in town today or this week. It was Donald Trump.
Well, I do think remembering 2008 when John McCain came to Jacksonville, a pivotal moment in his campaign was he said the day that Lehman Brothers collapsed, he said, the state of our finances are strong.
He said this, the fundamentals of the economy are strong. And right. In 2008 at Veterans Arena.
And I do think there is still a fear that when President Obama said that ISIS is the JV team, that can be a similar type of moment. And it depends. I mean, there's still 3 months. If ISIS were to do more damage in those months, something that is dramatic, This election is anybody's ballgame still. I mean, right now the polls show that Hillary Clinton is up, but it's important to remember that any sort of news event can drastically change people's opinions. Fear can always drastically change who decides to vote when someone else might have normally said, I'm going to just sit this election out. So just to look at the historical context of the 2008 election, And as for what Fred was saying about presidential candidates having a good idea of how they're doing, I do think you live in a bubble when you're a presidential candidate. I do think we remember 2012 when Karl Rove, for example, was saying that Mitt Romney was going to win, and he was absolutely sure he was. And Karl Rove is a brilliant political strategist who has reshaped much of the country. And if, like, even he was in enough of a bubble that he couldn't see what the polls were showing, I don't think it's far off to think that a presidential candidate who is drawing rallies of 10,000 people, as Donald Trump did here, that he's in a bubble where he thinks, I'm doing really well, I'm growing, and I'm going to win this.
Benjamin in Deerwood. Go ahead, Benjamin, you're on the air. Hey, Benjamin.
I'd like to throw out there that, I myself am very tired of hearing about Donald Trump and, a little bit about Hillary Clinton. But something that doesn't get talked about much is that there are other options in this presidential race. You know, we have Jill Stein as well as Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson polling fairly well nationally now. He's on the ballot in all 50 states. And love to hear about your opinions on those.
Sure. Guys. Yeah, thank you for that, Benjamin. And the Suffolk poll out the other day, for example, in Florida, Johnson's at 4%, Jill Stein at 3%, but they're polling a little higher at the national level. Gary Johnson and William Weld are on the Libertarian ticket.
They're doing better than third parties have since, Ross Perot. And we all remember the stunning success that Ross Perot was, which is why we, didn't have Perot in the White House. The problem is that a stunning success for a third party is getting, 15, 18%.
Yeah.
It's third parties. I mean,
options for voters.
It is. And the idea that you're not throwing away your vote, you should vote for who you think should be president. But mathematically, in a winner-take-all system, you have two parties. That's how the world works.
Okay. The way the election.
And we've spent a lot of time on this, but let's talk about a few other headlines from the week. In particular, concern about the Zika virus intensifying here in Florida after the state reported the first local transmission of the mosquito-borne virus within our borders. The CDC is warning pregnant women not to travel to Miami, where the virus is spreading. This is the first time ever we've seen a travel warning like this in the U.S. Lots to talk about, including the partisan squabbling over funding, Zika response. Governor Scott allocated more than $26 million to fight Zika, but he's getting criticized this week by women's health advocates because the Zika prevention kits the state is distributing to pregnant women are not being made available to organizations like Planned Parenthood. They serve a high number of uninsured women in South Florida. We're also learning that as the governor is bashing Congress for not funding Zika, he's being criticized for slashing money in the state for mosquito control. The finger pointing continues as we're looking at an unprecedented travel warning in Florida. Julie Delegal.
Two things. The Zika virus is not only about mosquitoes. And in those Zika kits that are being passed out in South Florida, not enough of them, there are condoms because the disease is also sexually transmitted. The other thing is that Governor Scott was criticized in a Reuters article recently for not inviting the entire CDC team down to Miami to investigate these cases.
And they finally did do that, though.
Did they do
that? Yeah, I think they have since done that because it's
gotten
worse.
Well, he brought the epidemiologist. But the longer you wait on this, the more deadly, the more dire the circumstances are. And this is associated with microencephaly, brain defects in babies. Florida needs help.
Under the governor's tenure, state aid to mosquito control programs was reduced 40%. And Scott, this is Politico's reporting, also ignored pleas from fellow Republicans when he cut a special $500,000 appropriation for the Public Health Entomology Research and Education Lab in Panama City Beach. The Mosquito Lab is what it's called. Florida now has 408 documented Zika infections. The other day on this program, we interviewed UF Health's Dr. Mobeen Rathore, a specialist in infectious diseases, and he said that it would be a mistake to think of this as only a South Florida problem, that Jacksonville is in fact a high-risk city for Zika as well.
There is a certain amount of not wanting to overly freak out. I mean, the travel advisory is basically for like a square mile area in Miami, and they've traced it to basically 150 square meter section is where, you know, the true problem is. So it's not like we're a, you know, Walking Dead territory of just, you know, the world is ravaged by Zika. But, you know, anybody who has sat out in their porch in Jacksonville knows that mosquitoes are a plague. So.
Yeah. And the travel warning, too, I think is something that really set people back on their heels. Andrew, the CDC has never issued a travel warning like this in the United States before.
Yeah, I actually think what's interesting about Zika, and we can contrast this with the Ebola virus, Zika actually suffers from a sort of lack of fear. So the Tampa Bay Times had this really long story about the Florida Keys and this effort. Scientists are trying really, really hard to get the Florida Keys to allow a genetically modified mosquito that will help deal with the crisis. It will help kill off the Aedes aegypti mosquito that carries the Zika. But they are very resistant. And throughout the story, you see examples of pregnant women who are going to the southernmost tip, you know, the tourist part. And the reporter asks, you know, are you wearing bug spray? And they're like, no. And they're pregnant and they're going to one of the most mosquito-ridden parts of the country where Zika is a threat. And what they're saying, like one woman, for example, doesn't eat cold cuts, doesn't drink coffee, was like talking about how she's like super careful with her pregnancy, but also doesn't think Zika is a real threat. Hmm. I think that there is a sort of complacency about this because we aren't seeing it as present yet. We aren't seeing the effects. And part of that is just women who are pregnant have to wait 9 months before they find out kind of what the effects of contracting the Zika
is. Exactly. The birth defects don't show up till the baby's born.
It's like West Nile virus. You know, every year West Nile virus pops up and there's warnings of, you know, make sure you're careful and all of that. But does anybody really pay attention to those?
Right. And we want your calls as we discuss the top stories of the week here on our Friday Media Roundtable. 549-2937 is the number to join us. And if you've been following the story of the troubled Jacksonville Eureka Garden housing complex, we want your calls about that. Because on Wednesday, federal agents with HUD, Housing and Urban Development, raided the Tennessee headquarters of the nonprofit organization that owns Eureka Garden and five other apartment buildings in Jacksonville. Local officials are praising the move as an important step forward in resolving problems at the complex. The head of global ministries in Tennessee has been called a slumlord for keeping residents in the HUD complex in deplorable conditions. As of 2014, global ministries owned $452 million in assets, thousands of apartments across the country, including the ones here in Jacksonville. Taxpayers paid the nonprofit more than $6 million in rent subsidies. By the way, Eureka Garden is now for sale. Fred Matthews, the mayor, city council representatives praising the Fed's raid on global ministries this week.
Well, it's commendable that this has come true, but the on the ground, it's still the same for the residents there. And what about them? Will the next person, whenever that corporation is identified, be able to go in and clean up the mess that's there, that they're going to inherit? Keep in mind, this is private property that just happens to take a subsidy from the government. They're not under an obligation to take that subsidy from the government if they buy this property outright and do what they want to do with it. The city of Jacksonville, just like any of these cities Global Ministries was in, had the same option that anybody else. The fire marshal, the code enforcement, all of them are under control of the mayor's office or that city. Any of them at any time could go in there, inspect these buildings, and condemn them or shutter them. That's what could have been done here. The problem they would have, on the other hand, is that they have to find some place for these folks to move.
Right.
And that is what faces all of them. But the options are there for local officials to do. And while this may be a bad thing for global ministries, it changes nothing on the ground for the residents.
Julie.
I interviewed Denise Hunt, who is a very vocal advocate for some of the residents who live in Eureka Gardens. And asthma gets worse with black mold. You know, the stairs are crumbling. Refrigerators aren't working. it's a horrible, horrible situation. I think Fred is right in raising the question about what are we doing for the people who actually live there in Eureka Garden Apartments.
Yeah, it's been dragging on now for such a long time, and some conditions have been fixed, but by no means all. Yeah, and not just at Eureka Garden, by the way.
Yeah, and what this raid is connected to is the Office of Inspector General, the independent investigator of HUD. So this is kind of separate from HUD itself, and it's believed to be financially related because the way that this nonprofit organization in Tennessee works is they get tax-exempt housing bonds. So this is taxpayer-subsidized mortgages that allow them to purchase these properties, and then taxpayers pay subsidies to them each month. So they get millions of dollars a year in subsidies, and then they have to file their 990s, and his 990s have shown he's paying family members, for example. And so this is, I believe, a primarily financial investigation into how Global Ministries operates. And there were three raids in Indiana, in Missouri, and in Tennessee.
Let's go to Leah in Palatka. Hi, Leah. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Just a moment ago, I heard on the radio that pregnant women who contracted Zika had to wait 9 months before they could find out any effects, and I believe that's not true. I think that ultrasounds can reveal, defects way prior to the birth of the infant. So, just clarifying that.
Yes, thank you for that. And if we erred in that, I apologize. Thank you for that call, Leah. And I am looking right now. Yes, you're right. It can be diagnosed during pregnancy or after the baby is born. Microcephaly is the name of the condition. Thanks for that, Leah.
The other thing on Eureka Gardens, and Fred kind of alluded to this, is as bad as the problems are there, really it's a symptom of a problem that Jacksonville has with affordable housing that is not basically a slum. So you end up with this idea that it's easy to say shut these down, stop the bad thing from happening. But
you've got to find affordable housing.
And Jacksonville severely lacks that.
Absolutely. And that is a problem, not just in Jacksonville, but you are so right. That is a big issue here. And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Well, only in Florida do guys in pickup trucks get busted for driving around with 6-foot-tall pot plants in plain view. Now, if you stop your pickup after running over a traffic sign, deputies might cut you some slack, but not if you speed away with a fully grown marijuana plant in the pickup truck's bed. Police in Vero Beach say they stopped 30-year-old Joshua Jackson after he hit a traffic sign by accident, then sped off. Some theorize he didn't stop and call the cops because of the fully grown marijuana plants in the back, which they spotted when they caught up with Jackson, who says he has no idea that the marijuana was even there.
It was for medicinal purposes.
That's right. Medical marijuana is on the ballot this fall.
The plant just wanted to see the city. You know, it never got out.
Only in Florida are pink flamingos under attack. Police at Busch Gardens in Tampa arrested 45-year-old Anthony Correo after he picked up and tossed a flamingo named Pinky at the amusement park last week. Sadly, Pinky was later euthanized due to the severe traumatic injuries she sustained in the assault. Correo is charged with felony animal cruelty. It's terrible.
I mean, yeah.
But on a happier note, only in Florida does private industry shoot for the moon. The Cape Canaveral-based startup Moon Express has received a green light from the FAA to do something that NASA hasn't done for more than 4 decades, land on the moon. Moon Express is sending a robotic lander up to the moon, a feat that would win the Google Lunar X Prize competition for the first private organization to reach the moon. They're up for a $20 million reward.
So you're telling me we can't get high-speed rail to go from Jacksonville to Miami, but we can get an express
if we can put a man on the moon, why can't we get high-speed rail, says Andrew Pantazzi. And I appreciate
it. You can't get it to Tallahassee.
Thanks to our panel, Julie Delegal, Fred Matthews, Tim Gibbons, and Andrew Pantazzi. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Back in a moment.
American consumers want what they want when they want it, history notwithstanding.
It's interesting that Americans were willing to consume footwear that was so clearly linked to a recent enemy state.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Our series, Summer, brought to you by starring the Flip-Flop, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First are proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
On the next Fresh Air, Israeli writer Edgar Keret talks about his collection of personal essays, The Seven Good Years. It spans the time between the birth of his son and the death of his father. Keret writes about being a secular Jew, the son of Holocaust survivors, and the father of a son who he hopes will never have to go to war. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
With hackers targeting politicians, are our voting machines vulnerable? I'm Ira Plato. Join me on Science Friday as we talk about the security of your vote. Plus, as the Summer Olympics kicks off, we'll look at the science behind the fastest strokes in swimming. Plus, our summer book club pick, Margaret Atwood's Oryx and Crake, all on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, TEDx Jacksonville is out with its new lineup of speakers for its fall conference, Fearless, at the Florida Theater. This year's event features 12 live speakers. We've got a preview right now with director Sabine Perwais and one of the featured speakers, Dane Gray. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And this theme of Fearless has drawn an interesting array of topics, Sabine. Why was that chosen?
We really wanted to get people to live kind of outside of their comfort zone and think about what they would do if fear wasn't part of the equation, what motivates them into action and not what prevents them from acting. So it was something we came together to decide on back in January. We had no idea that the current political rhetoric would play into the session that we're going into in October, but it's really exciting.
And Dane, you are a local Jacksonville resident who immigrated from Jamaica, and you've built a multi-million dollar business. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, we do parking and transportation management, really focused on airports, hospitals, and municipalities. It's been fun because, you know, it started off initially coming out of JU and having the opportunity to run a company as a college student, and all the way till now, it's been great.
Now, how is the theme going to factor into your talk? What will you be talking about?
My theme is going to be pretty much from the prospect or the position of coming out and doing it when I was in my early 20s, starting a company, coming from Jamaica, watching my parents migrate and being humble means and then having to be where I am today. So it's going to be all inclusive.
Is starting a business something that fills people with fear? I would think it would be. Was that your experience?
It was the scariest thing ever.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What were you afraid of?
You know, failure, right? But failure can come only if you don't try. So as long as you try and you have good people around you, then it'll always be some.
Yeah. And in addition to Dane, you're going to be welcoming 11 other speakers, most of them from this area. There's a couple from outside the area, but all kinds of topics are going to be part of the day. And people that buy their TEDx ticket, not only do they hear the great talks, this is happening at the Florida Theater this year, so a new venue. And I believe there's some more activity planned out on the street.
Yes. This is the first year that we're going to be taking our Aftergo party on the street. So we're closing down Forsyth Street. We're going to have tents up. We'll have a boombox, and we'll have engagement activities, great food, and really make sure that the people are meeting one another and getting to know who's in the audience with them.
And the cool thing about TEDx is once the speaker gives their talk, it lives online forever, and it can be viewed. Some of them get viewed many, many millions of times.
Yes, our talks collectively have surpassed million views, and we're really thrilled to be able to provide a clean, edited product that the speakers can use for their benefit after the event.
Now, for people that want tickets, it's my understanding some of the student tickets are already sold out.
Student tickets are sold out. We have about 300 tickets left out of 700. Okay. And we encourage everyone to go ahead and purchase the tickets. They will increase in price after October 1st. So we have plenty of time, but we hope people will take advantage of the seats. We don't know when they're going to sell out.
It's the new TEDx Jacksonville. It's happening on Saturday, October 22nd at the Florida Theater with 12 speakers. The theme, Fearless. Get your tickets now at TEDxJacksonville.org. It's an org, right?
No, .com.
Sorry, TEDxJacksonville.com. Sabine Perwes and one of the speakers, Dane Gray. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm John Braun. I'm an emergency planner for the city of Jacksonville, Florida. Individuals with special needs should register annually for assistance with evacuation to shelters. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes baby in the baby carriage. That's what we used to think, but this week, Snap Judgment gets real. We proudly present Nuclear Family. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT and Baptist Health for Girls Day Out, Saturday, September 17th, Hyatt Hotel. The day will include great national and local speakers that will inspire and empower you to live your life to the fullest. Tickets are $40. Do not miss out. Log on to WJCT.org/Girls Day Out.
Every summer has its song. Is this the summer song of 2016? Sold to one of the biggest names in hip-hop by the teenagers who created it.
No one really taught me how to make music. I just did my own little research.
Making a summer song. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Finally, this hour, the 17th Annual National Farmers Market Week is coming up. It's a celebration sponsored by the Department of Agriculture, and it highlights the important role farmers markets play in the nation's food system. Now, there are many ways you can support farmers markets all through the year, right here on the First Coast. We're going to talk about it right now with Lauren Titus, editor of the magazine Edible, Northeast Florida. Good morning.
Good morning.
And John Silvera, he's the new senior manager at the Riverside Arts Market. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Let's start with you, Lauren. Mm-hmm. National Farmers Market Week is next week, and I didn't even know there was such a week, but what's the purpose of it?
Well, the purpose is really to highlight the role of the farmers markets in the area, the role that the farmers play in creating a sustainable food system in our area. Mm-hmm. And farmers markets also serve as an incubator for small businesses. It's a place where a lot of businesses have their start to introduce their products and build up customer base and then eventually their business to possibly move into a brick and mortar establishment.
Exactly. And John Silvera, at Riverside Arts Market, people go for the fun, they go for the music and the stuff that's being sold, but they also go for the farmers market.
Absolutely. It's incredible. It's my like going into my sixth week there. So we have a farmer's row, and it's new this year. In 2015, Ram had decided to go to a producer-only farmer's row. So that's what we call it, and it's great. So we are the Riverside Arts Market. But, of course, the agricultural arts play such a key role in our economy. And I think it's a great week to recognize not only Farmers Market, but all the farmers that are out there, not only in Northeast Florida, but throughout the country. So I tip my cap to Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Absolutely. And Lauren, it's important that people ask questions when they go to a vendor produce stand. As I'm learning from you guys, some markets sell produce from suppliers that have sourced from overseas or other parts of the country. It's still good food, but it's not local. It's not locally sourced. And for people that care about that, they need to ask.
Exactly. Yeah. The farmers markets in some states are more regulated than in Florida. In Florida, it's pretty loose, and people have been coming to farmers markets not only for food, but also for a social gathering place. And they don't necessarily ask. They assume that the food there is grown by the person selling it. But that's, as we know, not always the case. So it's really important to ask the questions and to show the farmers that are coming that we really do care where our food is coming from and to support the local agriculture.
And this is a great time of year for summer produce. And the thing about farmers markets that I like is it's so much less expensive. You can buy so much fresh produce for a few bucks. It's pretty, for people that have never done it, they need to do this.
It's so true. There's an incredible value. Not only is the price point certainly very affordable, but, you know, the farmers that we have at Ram and other, you know, true farmers markets that you're buying from the producer, the nutritional value is just awesome, too. It's much higher than you would typically get in a food system. So, you know, the direct marketing, if we look at that as a food system, is really, it's incredible for the nutritional value and the freshness of the product.
And Edible, the publisher of Edible, has asked me to forward her challenge to all of our listeners as we mark the 17th annual National Farmers Market Week next week to get out and spend just $5 a week at a farmers market or $20 a month. You can buy so much at a farmers market with that amount of money, and you will make a very positive impact on all of the small farms in our region. Lauren Titus, Edible Northeast Florida is a magazine that's really dedicated to supporting that group of people in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So our mission is really to tell the story of food in the area, from the growing to the artisans who are doing things with food, to the restaurants, and to what home cooks are doing in the school systems. Because we have a really strong belief in supporting a sustainable food system in our area, because food is really at the core of what and who we are.
So what's coming up, meanwhile, at Ram this weekend?
Hey, this weekend we are having a great celebration, and I'm actually, it ties into a comment you said earlier about, you know, how to shop a farmer's market. So I'm going to make myself available not only this Saturday, but every Saturday. Come find me out at Ram and give you some tips. I'll walk you through the market and give you some tips on picking out agricultural products and food products and introducing you to the people that grow and make our food. So that's one of the things. We also have a great a registered dietitian coming out. She's been out at the market before. Heather is just absolutely incredible, and she really works. She's a professional with plant-based diet. So we're really looking forward to incorporating a real subject matter expert into the marketplace where customers can come and ask questions. So we're getting there.
Sure. Yeah. And what else should people ask? In addition to asking if produce is local, what else are good questions?
What the season is for the food, because sometimes at the non-producer-only markets, they'll bring in things that don't grow in Florida at the time of year in which they're buying it. And the other thing I wanted to add is bring your kids to farmers markets and let them see real food from the farmers and give them that $5 challenge. Let them take that $5 and buy some food and have them start connecting to their food, then take it home and cook with them.
Excellent. And we're getting an email about how not all local farmers markets require that vendors identify the source of their wares. We will look into that, and I'm going to forward that on to the editor here at Edible for her to look at. Thanks for that email. I don't want to read it on the air until we can get a little more information about that. But we appreciate all the feedback as we mark National Farmers Market Week. Coming up next week, you can support your local farmers market on Saturday at the Riverside Arts Market, or check out some of the other ones in the area, get some fresh produce, and support the local agricultural sector here on the First Coast. Lauren Titus, editor of Edible, Northeast Florida, and John Silvera, he's the new senior manager at RAM. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Check out our podcast on iTunes or download the show at the NPR One app. Diane Rehm is up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.